From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. California is an undisputed leader in clean transportation. It leads the nation, for example, in electric vehicles. Now, some of these green modes of transportation are getting a lot more popular, whether it's your car or your bicycle. At the same time, some have become more controversial, namely the state's embattled high-speed rail project. But green transportation is also running into some headwinds, from a lack of regulations to the threat of federal funding cuts. CAP Radio's politics reporter, Gerardo Zavala, has been tracking these developments, and he joins us now to discuss. Hey, Gerardo.
Hey, Chris.
So let's start with the state's high-speed rail project. Remind our audience how much the project is expected to cost and how much its price tag and timeline have grown over the years.
So when the project was approved in 2008, it was expected to cost roughly $33 billion. However, estimates have now ballooned to around $135 billion, which is more than four times the original projection. A lot of that money has gone towards extensive environmental review costs, which have delayed progress as well. The project also relied on outside consultants when it started, which also added to the cost significantly.
And Gerardo, there's obviously been some big changes with the project since the second Trump administration. Tell us about those.
So earlier this summer, the Trump administration moved to cancel $4 billion in funding for the project. California filed a lawsuit against the administration to prevent the funds from being taken, though.
And how did state officials, including supporters of the project, react when the Trump administration said it was going to cut funding?
So Democratic State Senator Dave Cortese, who chairs the Senate Transportation Committee, said the agreement is good news for the project, which is already underfunded. Here's what he had to say about the project.
There's just a tremendous, tremendous amount of potential in terms of billions of square feet of residential and commercial development.
Cortese also introduced a bill that would promote development along the rail corridor. He thinks the revenue from economic development and housing could help finance the project and boost the Central Valley economy. Some GOP representatives have been vocally against the project, citing its costs. Assemblymember Josh Hoover, for instance, said the project deserves a mercy killing. He called on those funds to go towards other infrastructure projects instead.
All right, well, let's talk about this new development. There was a new agreement reached recently between California and the federal government about money that was on the chopping block. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, sorry, that's the agreement I was referring to with Cortese before. So the agreement was essentially to prevent the funding from being taken from the project. The money will remain in a legal trust to ensure they cannot be redirected until the lawsuit is over.
Okay, and so let's talk a little bit more about some of the opponents to high-speed rail. How are they reacting, and are their criticisms any different from past criticisms?
I spoke with Susan Shelley. She's a spokesperson for the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. You know, the group has called the project a waste of taxpayer money in the past, and their stance has definitely not changed. Shelley noted that the project has been largely funded by taxpayers through the cap and trade program, which is a market-based system meant to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
What the governor wants to do is tax people another $1 billion a year through this system, $1 billion a year for the high-speed rail project, which is doomed. They have no path to finishing it.
So as she said, the project receives about $1 billion from the program every year, and it's received more than $7 billion over the past decade, according to CalMatters.
Okay, and then the state's high-speed rail authority itself, has it said anything about these new developments?
I reached out to them, but a spokesperson declined to comment.
Okay, so then, Gerardo, what comes next for this project, and how long? That's the question I think everybody's asking. How long is this project going to take?
At this point, it's uncertain even if the project will ever be fully completed, let alone how long it will take. In a July press release, the High Speed Rail Authority, they called the move to terminate the $4 billion in federal grants politically motivated. It also notes that the project is finally entering the track laying phase. There aren't many specific details on that timeline, however, and that it has completed all environmental reviews from Los Angeles to the Bay Area.
Okay, and then the final note on high-speed rail. You did speak with a UC Berkeley transportation expert about the project. What did he have to say?
So Ethan Elkind told me he thinks the project is now heading in the right direction. They've gained a lot of experience over the years, so they don't have to rely so heavily on expensive consultants, but they're still dealing with higher costs due to inflation and a route that is going to be expensive to complete. He thinks the only way the project will receive enough funds to be completed is through a new ballot measure that would need to be approved by voters. The issue with that is where the project started. Most voters are not in the Central Valley. They're in cities like Los Angeles and the Bay Area. They haven't seen any benefits from the project and have likely only heard about how expensive it is.
Right. And that is a huge problem for the project at the moment. Well, Gerardo, let's turn to a very different mode of transportation, but a really popular one, e-bikes. They've really taken off in recent years. Tell us, why is that? What's the attraction and how popular are they?
Yeah, you're right. They have taken off. You probably see them everywhere you go, especially if you're in Midtown or the downtown area here in Sacramento. They're very popular. The U.S. Department of Energy study found that e-bike sales have outpaced electric vehicle sales across the country by 20%. In California, those numbers could be higher, but I wasn't able to find any substantial data on that.
Okay, and so what is it about the bikes that make them so popular? What attracts people to them?
I think the big thing that attracts people to them is just the ability to go further, right? The ability to go on these long distance commutes. Say you have to commute to your job 10 miles or more. That could be a long bike ride if you're just on a regular old pedal bike. But, you know, this could be enough to help you get there without showing up, you know, sweaty or anything like that. So it really is appealing to anyone who wants to ditch their vehicles, especially if they live in a community that is friendly to bicyclists.
Right. It really opens up a lot of new opportunities for commuting by bike. Okay. So with this growth in e-bikes, what challenges are owners and riders facing?
So some typical issues with e-bikes is that they're really heavy, which makes it difficult to carry them up a flight of stairs. They're also very expensive. REI estimates the average cost of e-bikes is around $2,000. High-end models could exceed $6,000, which, you know, is practically reaching the cost of a used car. A lot of places also don't have secure long-term bike parking options for them, so people don't have anywhere to put them.
Yeah, well, let's stay on that issue of cost for a second. You and I were talking in the newsroom a few minutes ago about why they're so expensive. Any theories on why?
So there's a couple things. The big one is the batteries. These bikes have large batteries. They also have motors and advanced electronics. Depending on a person's commute, a more expensive bike with a larger battery might be needed over a cheaper one that can only go, say, 20 miles on a single charge. So that's a big one. Then there's a question of where to park them, right? If they're that heavy and expensive, are you really willing to leave it out in a public bike rack with no protection? Can someone living on the second or third floor realistically carry a 40-pound bike up to their apartment every single day? That's the question a lot of people are asking themselves when debating whether or not to buy one. I also recently spoke with Omar Pulido at a local bike shop. He's an avid cyclist, and he rides his bike to work pretty much every day because there's long-term bike parking facilities that are secured with the locked door. These typically require a key or a code to access them, and that's a big deal for him because he owns several bikes that each cost around $4,000. But at home, it's a different story. He doesn't trust his apartment's bike parking options because of the lack of security.
I love my neighbors, but you know, I don't want to lock up my expensive bikes out there. I'd rather have a, you know, cluttered living room than leave it out there.
Okay, so that could be a really big challenge for riders, and it might even stop some people from deciding to go buy an e-bike if there's nowhere to store it at home or work. So does California require job sites and housing developments to provide people with bike storage?
So there's currently not any bike parking standards within the state's building code. That means if it's on developers entirely to decide how much bike parking, if any, will be available at apartment complexes and commercial centers. And that's also, you know, short-term bike parking or long-term bike parking. Those are very different things.
Yeah, and you talked again, going back to the prices, like who wants to leave a $6,000
right
bike just outside their building? Okay, so is this something that state lawmakers are looking at, and are there any bills that would change this?
So there was a 2022 law that was passed to address this gap by requiring the state's housing agency and its building standards commission to consider mandatory bike parking standards in new commercial and residential buildings. It was set to take effect starting next year, actually.
And so is that still the case?
Unfortunately, no. Another law was recently passed that paused building code updates until 2027. Jared Sanchez, a spokesperson for a nonprofit bike advocacy group called CalBike, says the law is meant to fast-track post-disaster rebuilding in Los Angeles, which experienced the destructive Palisades fire earlier this year.
Right. So that was a bill to sort of streamline rebuilding efforts so they can rebuild their communities faster. So what are bike advocates saying about this delay on requiring bike storage? What impact could it have?
Well, there's less incentive to transition from driving to biking, especially, as I mentioned, if you live somewhere that is bikeable. Kara Verner with the Napa County Bicycle Coalition has a good example of this. She told me Napa recently approved a new 3-story apartment building near a transit hub. But according to her, the building had no plans to add an elevator or long-term bike parking. She argued that anyone who wants to bike or you know, utilize that transit hub will now have to take their bikes up the stairs. Here's what she had to say.
Imagine being someone who wanted to live in this great place that, you know, you're interested in lowering your carbon footprint, but you can't. You know, it doesn't offer you really the chance to bike because you'd have to lift your bike up and down the stairs in order to have a bike and store it right there in your own little condo or apartment.
Again, that was Kara Verner with the Napa County Bicycle Coalition. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Cap Radio politics reporter Gerardo Zavala about recent transportation developments in California. Sticking with transportation and bicycles, you've joined Insight in the past to talk about bike safety in Sacramento. A few weeks ago, you reported on a ranking of Sacramento's bike safety and accessibility. How did the city do?
So it didn't do great. The city got a failing grade of 36 out of 100. That is better than the national average of 30, but not by much. And the rating comes from People for Bikes. It's an organization that measures the quality and connectedness of a city's bike network. They look at whether or not a city's bike infrastructure has access to residential areas, jobs, schools, grocery stores, and parks, among other things.
And how did city officials respond to the People for Bikes rating? Do they accept or agree with it?
They strongly disagree. I spoke with Jennifer Donlon-Wyant, the city's mobility and sustainability division manager, and she questioned the project's methodology. She pointed out a popular bike highway in East Sacramento as an example.
M Street from Sac State to Midtown through East Sacramento is known to be an all ages and abilities bikeway connecting schools and healthcare and retail, and that is shown as a high stress facility. When known low-stress facilities like this are showing up as high stress, that concerns me.
Okay, so that's the city's perspective on this. What about cycling advocates? What's their view?
I spoke with Deb Banks, who leads the Sacramento Area Bicycle Advocates, and she agrees with the rating, despite the fact that she feels comfortable riding her bike anywhere in the city. She says that she's an outlier. Most people she speaks to don't actually think Sacramento is safe for bicyclists.
And Gerardo, just give us a reminder, what kind of construction or improvements has the city been making to keep bicyclists safe?
There's a lot of infrastructure projects in the works. One right now is looking at adding bike infrastructure and reducing lanes along Folsom Boulevard, and that is still in the planning process. Another one along Franklin Boulevard broke ground earlier this year, and a project along Broadway is nearly complete. The city has completed 2 of 3 phases for that project.
That's the road diet on Folsom Boulevard. Is that right? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I think it's between 48th and 65th, I believe,
okay.
Where it's like 2 lanes on each side.
That'll be a big change. Okay. Gerardo, as you know, the state and the city, they've both faced difficult budget situations this year. So how have those situations affected these projects?
So federal grants for these projects are extremely competitive because there isn't a lot of funding devoted to pedestrian and biking infrastructure developments. Jared Sanchez, again with CalBike, says the program providing these grants saw a $400 million cut in last year's budget. His coalition fought to restore those funds this year, but they weren't able to.
Okay, so then that raises the question, how reliable is this money and how much of it can actually go to these projects.
Yeah, they're not very reliable. The city official I spoke to about this said the last round of funding went out to only 13 of 250 project applications, and the state provided $119 million in grants when the ask was for over $2 billion.
$119 million in grants, and the demand is over $2 billion.
That's correct.
Quite a contrast. Okay, so are there any bills over at the state capitol that could provide more money for making biking safer?
There is one that I spoke to Jared Sanchez about. It's called the Bike Highways Bill. It aims to link communities with protected infrastructure across the state. Sanchez says the bill language has been watered down, unfortunately. The bill was initially meant to secure funds for these projects, and now it's just kind of become a planning requirement.
That's a big difference between actually getting the projects going to being just a planning requirement. Well, Gerardo, I know you're going to keep us up to date on this. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
That's CAP Radio's politics reporter, Gerardo Zavala, getting us up to speed with some new developments in California's transportation sector, from high-speed rail to bike storage and safety. Up next, turtles, snakes, and bees. CAP Radio's Manola Sakaya shares the latest stories from her Rewilding Sacramento series. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Chris Nichols.